questions before they start with the presentation, and I'm handing over to yourself to start.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Communication, Ms. Joyce Muluimha. Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Telecoms and Coastal, Ms. Mamoluko Kubai. Honorable members of the Joint Portfolio Committees, stakeholders and industry players who are present here, ladies and gentlemen, and of course our Honorable Minister of Communication, Mrs. Faye. It is indeed a pleasure to appear before you as the new constituted Portfolio Committee of the East Parliament of the Democratic South Africa. I would also like to take this opportunity to welcome you as the sector's oversight committee and to assure you of the authority's support and cooperation as you provide parliamentary oversight for the electronic communication, telecommunication, broadcasting, and postal industries. This, I believe, is the mandate you bring along from our people from across the length and breadth of the country, as evident in the past election. Let me hasten to add that the 7th May 2014 was also an important day on the calendar for ICASA. The authority played an important role in partnering with the Independent Electoral Commission to ensure that the country is once again afforded a free and fair election. As ICASA, we developed regulation for broadcasting coverage in the build-up and during the election, and monitored the compliance by all radios and broadcasting stations to make sure that they follow the regulations that we set forth on how media must cover the election. There will be a public along those lines, which I hope we will share with the members of this portfolio committee. I would also like to take this opportunity to welcome this joint sitting of the parliamentary committees, namely the communication and also telecommunication and postal. And I also would like on the same thread say unequivocally that from ICASA standpoint, we are extremely happy to report to our minister, our Honorable Minister Faith Mutambo, and from ICASA standpoint, I can assure you that we will give you the necessary support so that whatever you are doing from a policy angle, we as a regulator of this country should follow what policy dictates. Never once will we try and stumble ahead of policy, because if we do so, it's as if we are a regulator that comes from Alaska, and we don't want that to happen. Honorable member of the Portfolio Committee, I am pleased to say that the comments that we have received in the past from this Honorable Committee, it has helped a lot to look at ICASA and get that objective clarification of where ICASA must go. When I came on board, you used to receive our strategic plan for just 1 year. Since then, we developed a 5-year plan, which we did in collaboration with your inputs. And today, I can safely say that we are well underway in fulfilling those goals and the outcomes that we wanted from that. And I can also assure you that even though we are reporting to our Honorable Minister Faith Mutabo, we at ICASA would like to see ourselves as people who can serve both ministers. Because most of the policy that was defined before does indeed fall in both areas. And I can assure you that as long as I am still chairman of ICASA, even though I'm living now in borrowed times, this is going to be my last year. I will try my utmost best to make sure that this country, this rainbow nation, is moved forward in the IEC schedules. And the team of people that I shall be leaving behind are expertly qualified to carry this mission forward. So as a country, I can safely say that we are short of nothing. The whole thing is simply to deploy our people and also to understand that the road that we travel is a long one. We came a long way as ICASA, but we still have a long way to go in order to fulfill all the necessary objectives. I am very proud of my career in the ICT space. It started in 1979 when I got my PhD. Some of you were not even born. Now, when I am coming to an end, I feel so proud of this reunion, that so many good things have happened, and I do hope that you will take where we are living and carry this mission forward. My CEO, Agamine, he looks like me. We are not from the same mother and father. He's from somewhere eastward, Eastern Cape, and I don't know where I'm from. I'm half Polokwane and half Soweto. But that combination is me as beautiful as I am. And I can assure you that under his able hand as the CEO, since he has come on board, he has accelerated this organization, and it's moving very, very, very well. Today, I only have two councillors, Councillor Pillay and Councillor Joe. Usually, I used to bring the whole tribe of councillors, but you honorable members of portfolio committee say that can be a wasteful expenditure. So now I only bring two. But if you order me to help all of them, I will fly them this afternoon to come to show you how I take your input seriously. And I also want to again thank all the new members in this portfolio committee. Some of you I know directly, some of you I know vicariously, but I think we can all again work in the spirit of collegiality to move this IEC to be the mainstream in terms of developing our country and meeting the national development plan and other objectives that you as appointed politicians have set forth. Over to you, Chief.
Thank you, Mr. President. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, and honorable minister, I have with me the chief financial officer of the cost of the high-end Clarinda Wilson. And then the other general manager I have with me is Peter Prodes, who's responsible for policy research and analysis. Then Ronnie Diva, who's responsible for engineering and technology. Here's the CFO, here's Mr. Peter Prodes, here's Ronnie Diva. Then I have Jeff Cox, who's responsible for monitoring and evaluation in my office. And Norman Helbach, who's responsible for planning and strategy. In my Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, the content of my presentation, I will talk on the CASA's regulation. I will then go on and talk about the 2016-2019 strategic goals and predetermined objectives. Strategic priority programs. I will talk about the strategic priority programs purely because the CASA Council hasn't developed a strategy decided that there is a need to group all the projects that we do, find synergies on those projects, and see if we can streamline them within our resources. I will talk through that during the presentation. For the last 5 years, the CASA has been on a process of strategic realignment, which never really happened, and it started to put it together and implement it. And what? I can say today we're almost there. Then the 2014-2015 annual performance plan targets, and the CFO will address the expenditure budget. Money of the CASA, as this was established in terms of the CASA Act of 2000, to regulate electronic communication, broadcasting, and portal sectors in the public interest. Now it has been amended to include electronic communications and transactions, which poses a particular responsibility on us. Also to ensure affordable services or high quality services for all South Africans, we need to assign spectrum to licensees and issue licenses for electronic communication network services, electronic communication services, broadcasting and postal services. It's so mandated to protect consumers from unfair business practices. Some of the issues that we talked through during the strategic priority program, including poor quality of service and experience. We need to enforce compliance with rules and regulations. Our vision, Honorable Member, is to advance the building of a digital society. This has been enhanced by the passing of the broadband policy in December, which has caused us to review the very same strategy that we are presenting today. But the strategy for 2014-2015 remains valid. Our mission is to ensure that all South Africans have access to a wide range of high-quality communication services at an affordable price. Our market of the energy are like this. The broadcasting environment with a limited growth offers to the SSCs. SEDEC has covered the country with about 85% with 16, but we still have a few free SSCs. But only one subscription TV dominating the South African environment. With Prime license, a number of other players in the subscription arena, but the bottom line is that we still have that one entity dominating the subscription space. On postal services, the declining demand for postal services, poor quality of service, and the high cost that the post office experiences in providing universal service. There's always a discussion that we always have limited spectrum for new services. Spectrum must be released from somewhere else in order for it to be available, where in the broadband environment. And what is in the broadband environment, what is even more problematic is that it's difficult to find spectrum anymore. Where previously bigger chunk of step chunk so that you can get the speed that are required by end user. In the electronic communication services, there's a payment for significant investment that require especially large enables quite very high volumes, load and on the investment that is required. There's a high input cost to build broadband infrastructure requires huge investment. The present investment by Telcom of 140,000 kilometers of fiber has cost them not less than 20 million. The investment required in the mobile space is also quite high. There's huge problems around acquiring environmental approvals in order to put up base stations. There's municipal laws that are totally uncoordinated, that are not standardized, that create a huge problem for your infrastructure for broadband. And then there's also communicating challenges. At present moment, we see is a regulator that is being required to prop up existing business models. Whether those business models work or not work, it's practically example, there's a need for to reduce input costs, you need to share the rollout of infrastructure. But the sharing of rollout of infrastructure is done on commercial terms, never had the desired effect. There's an increasing divide between rural and urban areas, which if we don't release so-called high demand spectrum in the lower ranges, which is presently used for broadcasting, then you're not going to get coverage for the broadband that you require in one area. And this market creates reality, including our actions, has put South Africa in a particular position for kind in decision making, for limited growth in SMEs. We don't even allow MVNOs to operate, they still operate on roaming basis. And we've got huge number of ETS licenses that don't have access to infrastructure in order to provide services. And we need to enable that. The principles are central to regulatory function and to regulating the public interest to provide consumers with affordable services and ensure high quality of service and experience. But we're also required not to unduly interfere in the commercial activities of both broadcasters and telecommunications providers. On an industry analysis, what we've found is that in the broadcasting environment globally, a lot of entities have moved from analog to digital. We're supposed to be switching off roughly 9 months from now, by June next year. However, that migration, in the case of South Africa, is delayed by specification of set-top boxes. And the question we need to pose to ourselves as we analyze this is whether we need to subsidize set-top boxes or whether we need to subsidize digital TV. These are some of the questions that we need to pose. Because set-top boxes, especially, are saying it's okay for you to keep an analog TV in perpetuity because we provide you with a box that allows you to translate the digital signal into analog signal, which your TV is able to do. Which means we have the potential to actually keep our people better through set-top boxes. Yet we can be able to allow certain other things to happen. And the question we have actually posed to chief manufacturers is what do they really need in order to manufacture digital television? So that sensor can transmit the signal and is received by people. The other issue related to that is that in the ITU, by 2019, according to studies that are being done, there's the argument that more spectrum will be required for broadband services. If you look at countries like including in Africa, we have never had capacity to be required. We probably won't have the resources nor the capacity to build a standard fiber, which means you need needed more and more spectrum in lower ranges of the bands, which is the range that are being used for broadcasting. And questions should then tweak, use that spectrum for more broadband, because that broadband also allows transmission of broadcasting. It's not that the broadband is not going to be able, so it's only going to provide voice. That broadcasting will be left on the sideline. And the debate that's going on internationally, as well as by 2019 and by 2023, the totality of digital to digital migration then takes place where broadcasting happens anyway, instead of setting aside spectrum for digital terrestrial transmission. In broadband, we're highly divided. We have policy published in December. Our rural areas are still 4% poor. As a result of that, we're sitting around with cheap white spaces instead of actually running a broadband. Cheap white spaces only allow certain things to happen for opportunistic or for opportunistic candidates to put the country in another place. But at the end of the day, what we need to do is to take spectrum, allocate spectrum, let there be rollout of services, allow other entities access to that infrastructure which is rolled out on the basis of that spectrum which is placed by the state, and make sure that the proliferation of both broadcasting and telecommunication. That will bring rural citizens to the real mainstream of global economy and provide the connectivity that we require in our schools, government agencies, and more. At the present moment, we are about to roll out smart cards. We are about to roll out NHI. Without that high-end infrastructure, we will find ourselves in problems. It was interesting to see an article in Financial Week, which was showing everything rising from petrol to maize to high school fees, a huge number of percentages since 2002 and 2012. What was interesting is that the prepaid cost of a mobile call reduced from 2004, it was about 305. It's now about 79 cents, and if we have our way, we'll reduce it even further. With the process to allow our business. Internationally, IPTV is what is being rolled out. Over the top services, I mean, some entities acquired Facebook, that acquired WhatsApp. And all of those have huge implications from the way services are being delivered to people. Other countries, Mexico, has just gone and adopted the Asia-Pacific band on the 700 spectrum for the purposes of getting scale economies from the Asia-Pacific countries in the rollout of the broadband, and took the whole 700 band and allocated it for all the open access. And it is exactly like in Germany, where they demanded that you are not going to roll out in the urban areas, you start the rollout in the rural areas and then urban areas and so on. It's speed up rollout. Because the operators make money in the urban areas, but I'm quite used to the existing business model. And we force them to run out in rural areas so that they can in fact go to the urban areas.
Okay, that's
interesting.
That's all I can. I have a real opportunity that we need to take lessons, and I'm tempted to read along with this information to actually proceed by saying, because we do have some time constraints, Craig, so yes. I request some
comments. Those are the market realities and the international context. The strategic goals and predetermined objectives that are indicated in that slide are goals that have been approved by the Council last year, August. And they have been revised year for last. They are part of the 5-year plan. At the moment, we haven't seen them changing. Except within them, there needs to be the specific forecast in a specific direction. There are still promote competition, and within that, the facilitation of active competition, ensuring other vendors take prices of IT services instead of their cost, and thirdly, to ensure effective quality, HDI and GE participation in respect. The second strategic outcome for related goal is the promotion of digital agenda, which has also been triggered or been promoted by the passing of the broadband South Africa Connect broadband policy, which has facilitated universal access to broadband and services prices by 2020, and promotion of the development of public community and commercial products and services in the context of digital migration. The third one is the promotion of efficient use of spectrum resources and using innovative approaches in the utilization of technology and dynamic spectrum usage. Fourth, the protection of consumers, which is an ongoing activity where we need to continuously look at consumer rights as protected by consumer protection act and PCS and universal services and access. This one has been more innovation of the capital. There's a lot of things that we have to do to streamline processes in the capital area. Some of these challenges were addressing in the next strategic question. The fourth strategic program that has been created by the Council of ICASA is the cost to communicate high demand spectrum, high level, high city competition inquiry, digital migration. Chair, with your indulgence, the next four slides are actually addressing the totality of slides in the annual performance plan. But if I talk to the details here, it will be addressing all those issues. With your indulgence, again, I can go into that detail or go into detail again. But I think that this explains it better. The cost to communicate program entails looking at a number of issues. Besides the fact that we are reviewing the call termination rate system and mobile call termination rate as a result of the cost challenge and the way we did regulation before, we have 6 months to rectify that. We have finished the project by end of September and come with a new rate for fixed and mobile termination. It involves cost modeling. We also need to review the standard terms and conditions. Purely because at the present moment we don't approve taxes, as an example. But operators know they will notify us of what they are charged, and then within 7 days, if we don't respond in one or some other way, they go ahead and launch service. And that has been problematic, in that some of the charges that are filed are problematic to end users. They don't provide the required transparency. There's also a program with on-net and off-net price differential. If you are holding what our formula is called subscriber base of 23.5 million subscribers, if you remain within what our phone's network, then you've got the lowest cost you can ever incur. Whereas once you start going off-net, you start paying 1.5 million. Then there's rules, which are related to bundling of prices. For instance, if you don't use your airtime, you don't use your data bundle in 2 months, it's fine. Are those rules appropriate or not? Do they help the end users? On one hand, we're not required to interfere in business models of operators. However, on the other hand, we must help fair business rules. Promotion and incentive. And there is an interim and begin regulation that we intend to develop for purposes of transparency. On the highest demand spectrum, what we've not been doing in the last 5 years since 2010 was after the issue is settled. So a certain extent has been harmonized, some of the spectrum has been gotten there from center and from other entities. However, it's still not an issue. And the question is, how long will it take in order to do that? In an engagement, we broadband environment is a high volume, less margin type of environment. High investments that are required for the type of returns that you get from it are not that high. And if the input costs are high, then the rollout is not going to be what you require. The high level of pricing in ICT competition in Poyar with these types, purely because we're asking ourselves what's the effect of this consolidation. What does it mean when Vodafone acquires Innotel? What does it mean when there's a transaction going on between Telcom and FGN? The consolidation happens because there's lesser investment available for infrastructure. But if it happens at the expense of other entities that result in a duopoly or other people not having access to infrastructure, then it becomes problematic for the country as a whole. That is why we're doing that budget, because we need to respond to the notification that has been made by the agency. And the last one is digital migration. We need competition in the subscription area. Perhaps we need to just simply address conditional access. We have had discussions centered around the digital rate card and the cost and questions that have been posed by colleagues here. And that it is costly, but civil center has indicated it is costly because they are forced to distribute their costs among the few entities. Whereas if we license more entities to free to end, then there is that possibility. Some of these possibilities, as pointed out by center, is that there are channels that are available in different provinces. First, we need to license the provincial level and make sure that it's free to air provincial level. And if in consider conducting community TVs to provincial licenses, those are some of the things that we need to discuss and actually implement. Then Centec has got a huge number of entities that are able, or that they are able to charge the infrastructure that they've brought up to. Honourable members, in order to implement one of this, I'm not going to go into detail of the structure that we've designed to try and improve our operation. But what we've essentially tried to do is to create one position for the chief operating officer, which was not there to coordinate. So that is all regulatory activities, or regulatory divisions. The divisions were working in silos. Define licensing in engineering and licensing and licensing and compliance regimes and all. So what it did was to group all licensing activities under one area, group all compliance activities under another area, and all it puts those under the chief operating officer. And by the way, this is also just simply implementing a research that was done by CASA, the Adam Smith International, about 2011, but was never implemented. Honorable members, I can answer any of the questions that can be asked on the annual performance plan. I'm not sure whether you want me to go into that detail or give it to the CFO to get into the So I'll hand over to the CFO to then present the budget.
Thank you, Jay, honorable members. ICASA is currently funded by government grants received from Treasury. As you note on the slide that's up now, there has been a decline in the annual increase in baseline allocation. For the past 2 years, increase has been below inflation, which is not a favorable position in light of the fact that expenditure is increasing and is aligned with inflation. In addition to our baseline allocation, we received ring-fence funding specifically for infrastructure assets, also monitoring equipment, and smart monitoring equipment. It's a three-year allocation dating back from 2012-2013 to 2014-2015. One of the reasons for the decline in the baseline allocation is the fact that in previous years, we were receiving government grants for regulating the postal sector or postal activities. The allocation has subsequently been stopped by Treasury. and the consistent increase in our pipeline allocation. Okay, the next slide talks to our budget allocation. Since a limited fund, our budgets are basically allocated towards project and wages, goods and services, and normal projects. I'm looking at the 2014-2015 column, which talks to our 350 million baseline allocation. The salaries and wages make up 65.5% of our baseline allocation. Goods and services, 35%. Normal projects, just under 10%. And then our 15 million of incentive funds. We're budgeting for a deficit in the current year. The reason being is our baseline allocation can only accommodate salaries and wages and operational expenditure. And normal projects. Normal projects are budgeted funds allocated towards our strategic plan objectives. With the current funding situation, we are able to fund our capital acquisition. In the 14-15 year, by budgeting to purchase capital items, we are running into a deficit. A deficit is or has been budgeted for the 14-15 year and for the 3 years in the MTS period. The deficit is currently being funded from reserves. Reserves arising from savings, savings from not filling vacant top positions due to a moratorium pending the finalization of our restructuring, and also from interest generated from savings that have been invested over the years. Unfortunately, reserves can only last so long, and post the 16-17 financial year, we will not have any reserves available to fund any capital additions and also projects that fund our system. As indicated, part of our budget allocation goes towards normal projects that assist in us achieving our strategic objectives as per the strategic plan. There's a slide that talks to the allocation of our normal project budget among the core divisions. So the normal project budget is predominantly allocated to our core divisions who have the bulk of the responsibilities towards delivering on our strategic plan. A very small portion is allocated towards our support division, for example, your finance division, your human resources division, and IT division to improve on our system that we've got in place in finance and HR. And then I spoke to ring-fenced funds or funds that were specifically allocated for specific purposes. The counter was without any postal monitoring equipment, road card monitoring equipment, without adequate vehicles to monitor interference, without any suitable equipment to monitor our network, etc. So Treasury was going out to allocate us funds over the last 3 years. As indicated on the slide, we have spent the majority of those funds. In the current year, we've got 15 million left that we need to spend on spectrum handheld analyzers. We've also spent 15 million in the last year on spectrum monitoring equipment. We've already purchased our broadcast monitoring equipment and added to our vehicles that we use to monitor interference. Due to our budget limitations, there are additional needs that we've identified. What I've got on the slide is just examples of the additional needs that we have at ICASA. Current infrastructure needs are a consumer complaint system, quality of service, we need additional vehicles to monitor and take measurements with regard to quality of service. Our current software that we use to monitor quality of service has limitations. So in order for us to basically be more effective in that area, we need to acquire additional software. Currently, we do not have a geographic mapping of broadband. So in other words, there is no mapping or map or data identifier that talks to telecommunication services or infrastructure in South Africa. We've also got additional responsibilities as a result of the SKA. We would need funds for fixed monitoring sites. We would need to rent a site to govern our responsibilities of the SKA. We would need additional resources to assist us with those responsibilities. Also, that would attract other operating expenditures as well. Currently, in the license and compliance division, we've got compliance activities that we need to undertake. We've got limited resources in that area in terms of staff or personnel. We cannot effectively conduct our compliance procedures. We've got over 1,000 licensees registered, CASIMASA, CDSCC and S licensees. And currently, with regards to compliance, we are not even conducting compliance procedures on not even half of that number. Then also, with regards to complaints that we receive related to services received for consumers, we are holding short. We need additional resources to assist us with managing complaints, investigating and reporting back. Quality of service, personnel of course are needed in the engineering division to assist the consumer affairs division with crafting or taking measurements related to quality of service. And then also the engineering division is planning or would like to establish a frequency planning and research division. Unfortunately, our budget does not allow for this to happen, so the estimated cost of acquiring resources, if or in the event the division is established, is indicated as 12 million for the next 3 years. So we've budgeted or estimated the cost of these additional needs, being 81 million over the, from the 14-15 year, 15-16 and 16-17 year. Not a lot of money, 81 million is not that much, but it would go a long way in ensuring that ICASA is an effective and efficient regulator. Okay, there was also a research project that was created.
Can I sincerely request that you sum up?
Okay,
the question has really taken
okay.
a lot of time.
Okay, so can I sum up on the finances? There was a research project conducted by the DOC into suitable funding models for ICASA. The outcome of that research indicated that ICASA could be funded by four different models, one being government funding, one being a mixed funding model, utilizing government funds together with a portion of the license fees that are collected, and also self-funded, meaning because it determines its budget, obviously with the government approval with regards to the budget, and then self-funded and self-determined budget. In other words, budget determined by ICASA and then approval of that budget by ICASA. The report or the research project recommended a mixed funding model for ICASA, in that currently the ICASA Act actually accommodates such a funding model. If you look at Section 15.1 and Section 1A, it talks to ICASA being funded via government funds and also by money determined in any other manner on agreement of the Ministers of Communications and Finance and approved by Cabinet. So currently, recommendation is that the mixed funding model is something that would be suitable for ICASA and would assist in eliminating the budget limitations. Thank you.
Yeah, but I know that there are no additions in the presentation now at the end. And I'm going to now take the hands from honorable members on areas that you want to raise. Honourable Mackenzie, Honourable Sheen, Honourable Davis there, and then Honorable Kekana, Honorable Odesi, and Honorable Om. Honorable Odesi, Honorable Marcelo. Okay, Rosie, your hand will go up.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson, for the presentation, and I wish you well in the next year. In terms of the one dominant player dominating pay TV, I've heard that in several presentations today, and although I have no personal interest other than being a multi-choice subscriber, the reason I subscribe to multi-choice is they deliver a good product. And perhaps the key then to competition and expanding the market, you know, the answer lies there. Deliver a good product and you will get people to buy us. In terms of broadband services, when you benchmark the cost of communications and the cost of broadband, perhaps instead of benchmarking against our neighboring countries, where you tend to provide tend to see that the providers of the networks in those countries are South African companies. Or certainly South African infrastructure that's being deployed in those countries. Perhaps we need to benchmark the cost of our services against other countries internationally. And if you look at what you can buy, and I have one man that hounds me on Twitter, Gavin, I'm going to mention in this committee. He's quite passionate about what you can buy 1,000 gigabytes in the United Kingdom, for example, at £5. And what it costs you to buy 3 gigabytes of data here, prepaid, and perhaps those costs when we start to benchmark ourselves, perhaps we need to look wider in the world than just our neighboring countries. The important thing, as far as I can see, is in terms of the broadband environment, is that very valuable spectrum that you're talking about. And perhaps, is there not some way we could look at using a carrot or an incentive approach to get people to, when finally that spectrum gets freed up, allocate that spectrum against the rollout of services in under-resourced areas. And as a finder being in the ground, I won't mention the company, but I did see about a year ago, I did see a company in Johannesburg that has 7,500 kilometers of fiber in the ground, and of that about 95% of that is underutilized. And if gentlemen, if you want the name of that company, I'd be happy to give it to you afterwards. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure they'd be happy to lease you some of that spare capacity. Thank you very much.
Honorable Chin.
Thank you, Jefferson. I think the first question I would like to ask is clarity on where your cost is going to end up. Are you going to be in communications or are you going to be in telecommunications? The entire industry is actually sitting here waiting to find out. We'd hope that it would be announced yesterday, but obviously it wasn't. Also, well, I'd like your views on where you think you should belong. Do you belong in communications or telecommunications? Then I wanted to know what projects need to be finalized and deadlines met to switch all analog signals in a year's time. Can you give us a checkbox? What needs to be done, what it needs to be done by, and what is in the way, and how do we get whatever it is out of the way? You've mentioned something about, hit the boxes and have integrated TVs. Well, you know, that would be obvious, but it obviously hasn't been happening, and the previous minister was at great pains to try and remove those stumbling blocks. And if you can perhaps give some indication, I presume you were involved in some way with those discussions, if you can give us some insight into what transpired there apart from a mud-swinging confrontation through the media. In your strategic plan, you make a statement that the price of broadband has dropped. What research is that? What is that based on? It's on page 6 of your strategic plan. We know that the cell phone rates are coming down. How much has broadband come down by? Over what time frame? Also, we always, had years of listening to Constance's financial woes, and they're not irrelevant. But a part of the problem was your billing system, in that you didn't know how to bill people correctly, and there were legal disputes, court cases, nasty incidents happening to some of your councillors over trying to sort of get the money in. You then went on a spree to put in a big fancy computer system that was going to, you know, make wars go away. How is that billing system, is it implemented, is it working? Have you had any benefits to your cash flow from using it? And also, how is your debt collection progressing? I mean, we have every year a horrific figure of how much people owe you. Are you actually collecting the money that is due in, and I think particularly of the case of WBS there? In the standard presentations in their policy document, the strategic plan, there was frequent mention of how they were awaiting the regulator to do certain things, to make certain decisions, to produce certain policies. Can you please have some idea of what those are? What policies are you waiting for? What policy directives are you waiting for from the minister? And perhaps some of these were on the burner at the end of our last parliamentary year. Is the new minister, whichever minister you report to, fast tracking the rollout of these policy directives? Yes, and then of course the SABC. What action have you taken against SABC for not meeting its local content obligations? And yes, what progress on the termination rates, the court case, and I believe that on middle of June you had a deadline for submissions for your reworking of those, and followed by a workshop. Can you tell us what has happened with that, and what we can expect on the mobile termination rates? Thank you.
Next one, I'll be David.
Thank you very much, Chairman, and thank you for the presentation. I've got two questions, one for the chairperson, one for the CEO. The chairperson said that ICASA will continue to serve both ministers. And I wanted to know if this indicates that the decision to split communication into two ministries was flawed. And does it mean that you're saying that we should go back to the old divergence model, where we have the IBA and SAFA? I'd like your comments on that, please. And then, the CEO, you indicated that one aspect of the ICASA mandate is to keep the SABC financially viable. So what steps have you taken in this regard? And what are you doing to tackle wasteful expenditure and irregular salary increases at the SABC? Thank you.
Honourable
Kimberley.
Thank you for
the honourable chairperson. Mine is two things. For sure, all of us, we can see that this report is so sophisticated. It uses a harsh language for many people not to understand what is exactly a thing. But what I can tell you is that this report, maybe I think, is a product of consultants. And you should check the language that's here, maybe I think that it is. One, they don't want to tell us whether their messages are still viable or not. Whether they have achieved clean audit or not. And why if they didn't achieve it. They will tell you about legal changes, not explaining the court order that they had, or the case that they lost. You can see that there's a serious problem that needs to be audited. Minister, you can see that here, 59% of what we are giving them is going to their pocket. 40% is for rent. I think it's not good for the running of these government entities. And maybe you should not smile to them. Forensic audit should be conducted here. And you can see they've got 9 tenderers. All of them are getting a salary of BBG. And it shows very well that what is the aim of the recent management and the board. They are not doing what they are supposed to do. That's why you will see that there's a big problem.
in all the entities because of that. But maybe we will talk when we get a detailed report as written by them. Not just a cut and paste. Last one. Maybe the answer should be reduced to 5. What is the name of 9? And is it BBG 11? I thank you, Honorable Chairperson, President. Thanks.
I wanted an expansion on the municipal regulations that
made rolling out of broadband difficult, that you mentioned. What are the reasons, what can be done, why hasn't been anything done with them? I mean, if there are municipal regulations that make it difficult, can you expand a little bit more and can intervene? Who must be held accountable? What type of directives can come out? I heard you mention something like that. Maybe much more detail on it, so we can assist. And then it seems to me as well that I'm very happy with the mentioning of the fact that the thinking towards taking into task service providers around the questions of unfair pricing practices. I think it's a powerful point. The type of rates that they give, for instance, on and off net in your pursuit to make the price of communication, the cost of communication low. I think it's a very powerful development, and I would indicate that. I'm not sure whether we will have to. I would be on behalf of the community or not, but I think it's something that must definitely be pursued. To try and regulate. It's not interference, as far as I understand. It's just cheating consumers, basically. If I'm calling MTN, what's the difference from calling Vodacom? What is a call? So I think we might have a much more concrete approach then. Was it just a comment, or is there something that you are doing? Or is it not just you being creative? And then, is it the South African problem, in my view? I know it's not what might be put into your doorstep, but the minister is here. If we started taxing the private sector, we might have enough money in this country and the government to give these bodies and entities more money to do good work. The South African budget is based largely on consumer tax, like VAT and personal income tax. I mean, the private sector accounts for what, 3% of the total revenue. And they are not assisting with the development of the country. You are mentioning, for instance, that we must have a TV that not have to get a special device to connect a DTT, whatever. It's an innovation which if government had money would help start a company, get with the, even if they are from China, they develop that model in here we start producing those TVs. I think it's a challenging thing. And we raised here, you said that you are television manufacturers, if they can't come up, what do they need to come up with such a TV? But I know there are no television manufacturers in South Africa, unless maybe they are there. We need to have that conversation, and I know the private sector of this country might not. So maybe something that I get the minister, in the plan that you say, still coming, about the type of developmental opportunities in the ICT sector, we might want to consider using our own TV that helps us in this country. And then the last set of comments, to echo really the what have you done around SABC with regards to local content, and then lastly your independence. You see, if your communication is going to be difficult, that's my view, and I drag the view of ICASA. I hope President Jacob Zuma doesn't put you under communication, because that's propaganda really on GCIS. I will begin to doubt your the capacity of your independence. That's my view. The capacity of your independence. The work that you have to do around regulation if you are under the spokesperson of government. Thanks.
Anonymous server? Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think the ICASA is one of those entities that deals with where the country wants to go to. So the huge potential of dealing with the economy, especially whether reducing or eradicating unemployment. And with the questions that have been coming from our colleagues, some of those issues that relate to that becomes worrisome. I would want to know what potential, how many potential jobs that you think can be created if you unleash your full potential. what does Qatar from rolling out the broadband in rural areas, and you raised that CEO. And on the monitoring and evaluation, the person in your office who deals with monitoring and evaluation, so for the licensees, so can the, that is the person responsible for that, give us concrete numbers that there's so many licenses that are issued and so many of them are in operation and they comply with all the regulations that are proposed to be. The issue of the salaries and wages that take 60% of the budget is rational. And what is it? Because this budget is appropriated by Parliament. How can you work out a turnaround of the proportionality that more of the money goes to salaries and wages and not to actual programs that need to be done? How much of this budget also goes, when 60% goes to personnel, how much, what percentage goes to consultancies? And I think the CFO spoke of the Section 51A of funding models. What sustainable funding model do you have for to sustain the CASA? And lastly, is on the issues of people with disabilities, women and young people in your structure and also in the budget. How much of that is allocated to that? Honorable Shin and Honorable Dave, great issues, and Honorable Shin, you were putting with onto the Chesapeake Mouth on the issues of where Qatar should belong to. I think the President proclaimed last night, and I don't think this morning we'll be able to give that response of where it has supposed to where communication of course. I'm speaking at any Paragonese program. I don't think much has been answered from yourself. President is still a prime minister, he's going to meet with the ministers. Because he only proclaimed last night. I just believe that the other responses. I was trying to ask you on this other questions that are not related to you. Thank you very much.
Honorable Mali.
Friends and Chair, the one question relates to the municipal laws. I think that the CEO has alluded to the fact that there's uncoordination of municipal laws, which sometimes affect the kind of environmental impact assessment that needs to be done before the installation of base stations. So it might just be interesting to establish if they have been some efforts on the part of ICASA to try and find ways in which this could ultimately be standardized, because the four-ways problem that Honorable Josie is alluding to could best be resolved by greater coordination and having that standardization so that we could increase. I mean, there's still a larger part of this country. I mean, if you go to rural areas where some of us come from, you're actually struggling with the network. And to know this, you don't need to go far. You have just asked later what happened to them. They will tell you the story that they were terminating on MTN, and it was easy for MTN to make a determination on when and how people can access data. So it is important that we deal with that. And the other issue is just quite interesting, Chair, that ICASA and itself acknowledged that on the way that they do, they can't obviously interfere with the commercial activities of the broadcaster and the telecoms companies. It's interesting because one would have thought that there exists a space for a caster to start looking into best ways of financing its own activities going forward, generating a funding model. Because heavy dependence on national fiscals is slowly pulling us back. So it's important that as we get these presentations along the way, we are made aware on what the CASPA is doing to develop its own funding model, so that we are also stating that the sustainability of the agency is not entirely dependent on national fiscal. But also, other issue relates to provincial TLV, the excitement created by this digital territorial ETT. So there's a great excitement, and I've been told about many radios that have been created and many TVs that have been created. By the township, no longer in cinemas. It's also a big problem. We no longer have a pastor to have a device for all these days. So the issue here, which you will discover as well when you engage with the broadcaster in South Africa, is the issue that relates to content. So we can have this vast space where we run the risk of ultimately going the route of having all these channels, but they're struggling with the content. And I'm not sure how does ICASA interface with the matters of content, especially making sure that the things that are done by those who operate within the industry contribute to the greater empowerment of society. Well, to call them by their real name and follow the example of Queensland, Vodacom have got one service where from 12 o'clock midnight to 6 o'clock in the morning, you can call home and everybody for free. Now, even if you were to call during the day, you have done the same thing, you have called. The difference that we call the different tax. Now, this happens when the ICASA says its mandate is to protect consumers from unfair business practices. So, we have to understand your resolve on this 12 o'clock problem. This midnight problem, so that we can show our people that we mean good for our way. I mean, just at the passing shot, you will know that there is a greater dominance of all the mobile companies that started in when mobile was starting around 1994-95 are the ones that are dominating the market. You have tried everything in the cookie doesn't work. You have tried Ika, you have tried number coaching, it is still the same. They call the number, they do, please call me, they go back to the old number that they were using. Doesn't change anything. So that dominance in the market, aren't you able to just put a threshold? Because even now, Asia couldn't really survive the challenge that was created, or the competition that was created by those. I mean, sitting here in this room, honorable members themselves will know that ties have been tied to the numbers that they use for so many years. Even when they link up, Papa Yaga Yalila Yamavan, give me that number that I've always been using. Those who don't know, there's a RICA creator, there's a new thing creator of poaching numbers, and we don't understand how these things, all these things, we thought initially that these things are being done to make sure that we can facilitate the introduction of new players in the market. But what is effectively happening is that we are entrenching the dominance of established players, meaning that in South Africa will struggle even the best we can unless we come up with serious reforms. We will try to effectively introduce a new African-owned mobile network which responds to the challenges of the 21st century. Thank you.
Yeah, I'd like to raise some of the honorable matters.
Okay, honorable members, thank you for your questions. I'm going to allow my colleague, honorable Kuwait, to thank you for Chairperson. I've got comments and just some things answering. For me, mainly, there is a need for ICASA to go back to the drawing board. It needs to go back to the drawing board. The situation can't continue as it is. There is no bright future in just natural, in just family. ICASA needs to reposition itself. It needs to go back and redo strategy, how to survive in the current environment. As it is, it does not tell us that they will be able to survive going forward. A number of issues, a number of challenges in CASA, but does not. We are sitting as a portfolio committee oversight, being oversight on behalf of parliament and government, does not give comfort, I must be honest. The financial situation does not give comfort. Yes, there is improvement in terms of the audit outcome, but the emphasis from AG are still a concern. Secondly, one would want to see where there is hope in terms of mechanisms to improve. Actually, I don't know, I started speaking to my culture person on site properly because when the CFO started speaking, I became a bit more depressed. Because the issue was, the situation is not what you want to see. Issues of compliance, for example, you've got a situation where you have 60% you spend on remuneration. The issue raised by AG in terms of non-binding job description, no non-performance document signed, I'm not sure if that has been corrected, because that's what AG is raising. Improvement, but though you've got, and I think for me, it's the issue of the one, if the customer collects fees, and there isn't what AG is raising as well is the audit trade to support the license fees collection is a problem. So you have a situation where you can't follow. This is the license, this is the money, where the money went. That's why if you look even past financial year, consistently AG raises concerns about your national revenue fund administrative assets. I'm still well teaching my teaching campus that debt is being addressed. So, and it's huge money, if you look at it. But again, even not meeting targets, okay, the CFO might have tried to show us that there's challenges in terms of resources. But I'm saying you need to go back to the drawing board. You're not meeting challenges. Targets, 67% of targets not met based on your annual performance check. And if you have not met almost 67, close to 77%, you've met 33% of your targets. What does it say about you? Where are you sitting? That's something you need to go back to the drawing board. And that's conscious of the issue. An issue that ICASA needs more attention, urgent attention, where women have a serious engagement with ICASA, so that they tell us, how are they going to turn around the situation? Because the current situation is not sustainable, does not give comfort. A lot of institutions are relying on ICASA to be able to function and operate effectively. And if ICASA is at the state that it is, it has a huge impact in terms of this industry, telecommunication and ICT industry. So we have to find a way of really pushing hard together with the ministers, whoever eventually becomes part of the administration. We need to push hard to get the responsibility and get the department, the entity where it needs to be. The situation can't continue where it is. For me, that's a major concern. You look at even, when you look at a strategy, for example, and that's why, if ICASA says sort of what they are doing when they talk about governance, good governance, accountability, they are still going, their authorities have taken note, the things they have taken note of recommendation outlined in the Kingsley report on corporate governance and its relation to the credit. Kingsley report was released in the 1st September 2009. This is 2014. Okay. We asked this as an entity to try to think how we are going to bring. I mean, honestly, surely we didn't, if you were to take a bit longer, I think in 2011 you should have started incorporating the King 3, that model. So that's what I'm saying, like, for me, there's quite a number of issues. I can go on the whole day when we talk about what it entails in this report and where it is sitting. And my frustration is because this entity, a lot of entities are dependent on it. Its function is very important for the sector and for what we want to achieve in the sector. All these other things that we're talking about, the entity holds the key to its success. So you've got a list of legal challenges. And for example, you go back to the issue of, I think one member spoke about it, the court case. That court case could have been avoided. That's my view, and you can agree. But I think that when we went to court, you knew that what was anticipated, what is wanted. And remember, some of these things, President and President Putin, speaking about them from the state of the national address, he says the first state of the national address, reducing the court cost. All the things. President spoke about 2009. So as a selector, we should have started to hear after that time. You go and implement something, you lose it in the case because you've not put the process. And that's where you must share with us where are you in terms of making the decision and what is being expected from you. But Jefferson, you know, you look at what you, which historically, one of the strategic objectives of ICA is to ensure effective participation by the historically disadvantaged individuals in the industry. One of it is fair, it's a very crucial one. And these are policies. But the fact that we are developing a comprehensive complex report, it's not just the alert, but about things. It's still outstanding. And it's something that has been outstanding. And these are some of the other things that you've done have been raised. Because the things that are raising today are things that have been raised by portfolio committee in the previous parliament. And you've noticed that we do not, as I mean, function new. There's a legacy report that we take over. But we just hand it over, and some of the issues we're taking up because we know they are set up, they have been written, and legacy report that we will take over as a community. So if things are not there, it's still a problem for me. One of the things, for example, is the issue of complaints. The turnaround time in terms of responding to the complaints, but the ability of CASA to deal with the complaints that are raised. Not only the ability to deal with the complaints, but monitor the complaints after litigation is completed. And I'll make an example. When drive has gone well, if you are using any other network, it gets cut off. I know there was a previous case around this matter complained about this matter. But what about my top catching services around the operator? They can do it within inside for the world and not outside. But it still happens even today. You drive past for the world on the freeway. On the spot, they're cut off. That still happens. Something that's the issue. But another thing that I think I'm concerned about is the ability of that's what I'm saying, a lot of things. For me, I just feel that CASA needs to go back to the drawing board, look at what, how they turn around the situation. The issue that relates to processes, the promise to buy equipment, I don't know whether it's because some of the things there's no money, nothing has been done in this area as well. So when you have post office coming, when you see the money, they're going to complain about the CASA. Because the CASA is not the money they're supposed to be. The web of the CASA, a lot of entities depending on the CASA. And unless the CASA gets this housing order, one. See, in the last one, take the number of issues. I hope I can solve. Because I think maybe I'll be able to raise them when we have more details. When we have something, we have turnaround. I mean, there are quite a number of things. The issue of unbundling of the local group. The issue of the ability of CASA to monitor the licenses of the issue, the compliance of them. Because even this one, the impact has occurred, but has been policed over time, but has not been done. So, Chair, that's how I think what you must say is not a good story to tell. I agree. Yeah, we have issues that need to be addressed. And maybe if you can share with me the issue of the internal culture, the teacher there as well, the guys as well will ask it. But I just feel that for me, it can't let us go back to the whole watch check, push a second, reposition themselves, and come back and give us a bit of money.
Now, members have raised that amount for this quite a lot in CASA. Of course, part of the other things, the collaboration across board, you know, on the entities that you have, so that you can see this so much collaboration, the integration of the consultants as well, and as a major vector. But now, is this issue on the auditor general, is the outcome, where the material corrections, what the problem in the past, it came back still being a problem. In other words, if there were no corrective measures that we looked into that matter, what does it mean? You know, but then it means there are no consequences. Even if the auditor general has picked up something, still comes back the same way as it is. That's even what, you know, how do we then, you know, if we have teeth as parliament, you know, that's what does it mean? Well, that it came, it was seen, it still comes back. But also the issue that Honorable Kwaine has raised. You know, the issue of internal audit, if the, you know, the CASA is as it stands, and then we find that from the opinions, the issue around the internal audit, it leaves much to be desired. I think, obviously, we can't be happy on this one. We cannot be happy. I am going to allow the CASA to respond, but just before that, can I just indicate that there is one mission we made earlier on in the morning. The Deputy Minister is not with us at the moment. That's Honorable Stella Navini. She has lost her brother 8 hours of this morning, and her absence as well, just to send her to us and the former college. Kasa, you have 20 minutes to respond.
Yeah. Well, Honorable Chairs, your points are all highly, highly well taken. And I just want to say that the scope and magnitude of the work that we at ICASA had to do in the past, in my 3 years, and if you can compare and contrast where ICASA was then and where ICASA is now, you will agree with me that a lot has been done, yet a lot still remains to be done. First and foremost, when it comes to some question as to who do you report to, that is not even an ICASA concern. I report to my government. And if my government says I must report to faith, I will report to my honorable minister. And number two, GCIS is not a propaganda instrument. I coined that phrase with 10 other COMCAT members. I was part of the COMCAT team. We were changing this propaganda machinery, you know, which was in the past dispensation reminiscent of Nazi Germany. We changed it. So GCIS is a new formation which we came across
you know, after visiting 27 countries, after coming up with 85 recommendations, that's when unanimously passed. You know, that's how GCIS came. It's a very good instrument to inform our people. So it is not a propaganda machinery. If it were a propaganda machinery, all those people who were in that contest team would have recused themselves. You know? And those people were luminaries in all the fields that they worked in. So it was a very good endeavor, and we took it with the seriousness it deserves. So I am very, very proud to be to report under GCIS, because I think it is a very good place for to inform our people for information and other services. So it's not propaganda as many people try to put it. So let me stop there. And now coming to my government, that there is a proclamation that has been done, and we shall follow what our ministers say, you know, what our government say, you know, and we will follow it religiously. Now, coming to some of the issues that you have raised regarding the turnaround strategy of ICASA, yes, we have succeeded in many ways, but again, for almost the past 20 years, when names of ICASA was changed from IBM to Startup Central, no one was clinically looking at who is who at ICASA. It was just one layer, and then they bring another layer on top, and then another layer, the name changes. So that has caused a lot of problems, you know. We have a lot of good people and a lot of good people but not highly educated. And there was no educational or lifelong courses of education that were embedded at ICASA. And now we have tried to do that with realignment. For instance, we no longer just talk of managers, but we talk of this dual stream where some people can be managers, but others can be researchers and they must be trained accordingly. And yes, we have come a long way. We did a skills audit. That was one way of, you know, looking at the program. Number two, we know that our government is trying to get people employed. So at ICASA, we don't want to just do a retention of people. Some people are 40, 50. Where will they go when they leave? So our intention is to try and re-engineer ICASA by training through lifelong learning. You know, we have some agreement with the University of UNISA. It's not yet fully defined, where they will help us to try and train our people, not just UNISA, but we Johannesburg University and also Vets too. You know. So when I took this position, I told you that I want to make ICASA a knowledge-based institution. And you can already see activities that point to that direction. We are not there yet. But honestly, we have come a long way in getting those elements right. You may say that our strategic plan is cut and paste. It is cut and paste because we are not changing, radically altering what we have said in the first year in a 5-year plan. You know, but as you are moving, there are certain intervening variables that come in, and as soon as you correct those, then you know you will cut and paste and put what is now what reflects where we are at ICASA. You know. But again, I must be the first one to admit that we are not there yet. But with the new CEO and also the 5 senior positions that were filled, and right now the internal audit also, we have a new person. We have a new person in CFO, only a year, and the person that we brought helped us to get a clean audit. And now we have internal audit, which is also beginning to find its feet. So that is a movement in the right direction. And with the new CEO, we also, that was your concern here in Parliament, that we shouldn't continue with the interim structure. We must formulate a new structure. And there is a new structure. It's formulated, approved by our council. And now we are beginning to populate it. And as we are populating it, we are not populating it carelessly. We are doing performance plans, evaluating people. Other people are graded. Other people are not where they should be, and are providing training to try and lift them. And that is an ongoing element. And I can safely say that the concern that you have here, honorable members of the portfolio committee, are correct. But to be quite honest, 20 years of building ICASA without cleaning it as you are building it takes heart, and it also takes time. You know, the King report said, we started with the King One, both of the late Moran, and we are still trying to move into that. And we are not yet quite there yet. And also, we speak about areas of trying to bring the local loop. Local loop concept started with the late Minister Kasabu. At that time, I was chairman of CENTEC. And those areas are still continuing.
The final point, can I hear what you're saying? Thank you, Chair. I'm sure we're all fascinated by this CD. We have 3 minutes in which CD will have to answer. So can we please answer the question?
Okay, thank you. But I just wish you could say one day we should have an in-depth presentation of ICASA, and that will help you also to understand where ICASA comes from, so that we can understand where we must change. And I agree, there are still a lot of things that are there. And of course, my CV is very impressive. Thank you.
Chair, with your indulgence, can I ask another three questions between myself, the CFO, and Mr. Fuentes, and then the rest will provide details with their comments on it to respond to the comments. The one aspect that I just wanted to point out on this document is the fact that part of the detail is actually in the operational plan. Then secondly, part of the detail is related to decisions that have actually been taken subsequent to the submission of the strategic plan. Hence, we need to provide that update. And an example in relation to local urban funding and the regulatory impact assessment, which ICASA has decided to do in order to then look at local urban funding in totality of the context of project, rather than looking at it just in terms of what was designed at the beginning. The other issue, the reason that part of the responsibility of ICASA is to ensure viability of the SAPC is based on the fact that we impose local content obligations on the SAPC. And because we impose those local content obligations, they need to be fair and they must be delivered. If we impose local content obligations, that SAPC at a certain point in time is not able to meet, then that viability is neither there either. But it's that relatedness that we deal with in relation, because we impose local content obligations and then again. If I may clarify also, where on that slide where I had the number of circles and all, where I was indicating the number of things that we need to do, those are specific items that the CAPA Council has decided they have to design. It's not as if we had a choice. As an example, the on-net, off-net, price differential is an investigation that's ongoing by the Competition Commission. But it's also been a complaint to us in relation to that. Some of the things have been imposed by us reviewing, not simply doing for shows in terms of consumer or traffic consumer issues, but looking at specific items that affect consumers and try to address them. The reason we are focusing on transparency because of the realization that promotions are actually misleading the consumers. All of them. And in most cases, if you look at the promotions that are there, they are promotions that have been repeated about 3 or 4 times. And people think that it's an applicable tariff when actually it's a promotion. When there is the issue about the KGP and multi-choice providing good products, the only question I can pose that is a challenge for all of us. But if it's a good product, I don't need premium TV. Once all of those, I probably watch only 3 or 4 channels out of it. So that is not the case. And our main consumers actually watch it that way. Why don't you pay as you need? It's just a good thought, not some of the policy directions, one of the things that have happened right from the meeting with Mr. Mutambi is that one of the issues that she raised was that why don't you develop options on some of the policy directions that are supposed to be developed and will never develop, for example. If you take it as an issue, policy directions, the that is better must never issue it. That policy directions were developed in 2010, and the CASA developed an invitation to apply 2010. Since then, no action has come to place. And the CASA simply requested on a lot of problems. We didn't do anything about it. Now we're sitting with that problem. It's an issue of between stakeholders, setting bounds and taking specific action. There is a trend with the structure that we need to, let's put it this way, there was a problem of no consequence. I guess it's something that sometimes happens in a number of institutions. Where certain things happen, performance is not measured properly. There's no, there is an applicable policy, but there's a tackling between the union and the self about how does this policy get implemented. And then in the process, the policy or that settlement policy is implemented in settlements. At the end of the day, we don't measure that capability. And the reality is that we have to rectify the totality. One thing that I must point out in relation to the CASA, I'm saying this from having been at the Department of Communication at the second stage and now back at the CASA, is that actually the structure of the CASA that exists today is a historical structure of trust. It became the sum of the when the postal regulator was then added, it became the sum of the trade. Never a rationalization of this transaction. There's an understanding that is going on now about the fields that are acquired and the fields that are there in CASA. There's a lot of people that are quite qualified in CASA, but there's also a lot of simplification. There's a lot of process issues that needs to be looked at. For instance, I didn't have a we don't need to be licensed in club licensing. And sitting the regulator adjudicating over a club license instead of authorizing. Or instead of doing some of the things online, we can incur costs that are unnecessary. And as a result of the consideration of that structure, if I think with this and what I'm going to share with the members of parliament is a report that was that indicate how the CASA is being paid as compared to the market as the president. People in CASA are quite highly paid. And being highly paid, they are at a certain percent line of the market. Some of them have been close to 150 or 200%. So there is that problem, but let's also remember it was a COVID
There was a question around voting systems. I believe there's some confusion here. Part qualifications were not used to because of the ability to accurately calculate an invoice licensee. I believe this issue relates to the Spectrum voting system. There is a Balin system housed in the engineering division that accurately and completely calculates second invoices. The challenge we had in the past was the fact that the data would not be transferred to our financial reporting system, which is JDE. We're in the process of overcoming that challenge, but in the interim, we upload the data from the engineering section system onto our financial reporting system. The AG has been quite happy with that process last year, hence our qualified auditor opinion. The issue around the legal disputes, those are all legacy issues emanating from flawed regulations, predominantly the spectrum radio regulations. As an example, WBS was mentioned. Most of these disputes have been resolved. We've only got one major outstanding disagreement relating to a federal government department, and their inability to settle the VSS is also due to budget constraints, so that's beyond our control. And we cannot supply any of the issues contained in the spectrum regulations to try and recover that money. For example, stealing of equipment, because as you know, we cannot steal a government department. So it's beyond our control, but it does impact our collection. But besides those challenges, mostly related to, besides the current major contributor towards our outstanding spectrum debt, there are other smaller government departments who take a while to actually settle their debt, spectrum better amount. But as I say, yeah, it's beyond our control when it comes to feeding and applying the regulation. Okay, there was another issue around food and waste for expenditure. We have what accurate and adequate policies and procedures in place now. We are applying the guidelines that were issued by Treasury with regards to the fruitless and wasteful. PSMA also prescribes the disciplinary action that must be taken against perpetrators. And we have followed the process with regards to last year's fruitless and wasteful and irregular expenditure with regards to disciplinary action and trying to recover it. That will be to close in our financial statements at the end of July. Yes, as I mentioned, we did get an unqualified audit opinion last year. And then the ratio of our service and wages compared to our total baseline. Yeah, the merger of the three regulators, we never did stop. If we want to change that ratio, we need to basically lay off staff. We've got other constraints, we don't have a budget to retrench people. So that is something, if the government, the committee wants us to do something about the percentage we pay towards salary and wages, then assistance in that area would need to come from the relevant bodies. Then there were other issues. There were other issues around monitoring and evaluation licenses. I think the question was more around the ECS, ECNS licenses, whether they're fully compliant, non-compliant, non-operational. We've got over 700 licenses. At least half of them are fully compliant in that they meet the compliance requirements from a licensing and compliance perspective and also from a financial perspective. So currently, we the major contributors to our license fee, we are collecting from them financially or fully compliant when it comes to our compliance procedures. Then there was a question around consultants. 5.6% of our budget goes towards consultants. We have implemented a cost-cutting measure with the Director from National Treasury. We've, in fact, been proactive and implemented for the past 4 years. You'll know that in the financial presentation, there's an indication that our goods and services have been consistently decreasing over the past 4 years. So we have applied cost-cutting measures on consultants, on travel expenditure, entertainment, all the necessary areas as described by the directive issued by National Treasury. Then there was the issue around the sustainable funding model to sustain CASA. Currently, we are government-funded. Currently, we have a software which allows us to actually cost our activities. It's called activity-based costing software. So we know exactly how much it would cost for CASA to be an effective and efficient regulator. Unfortunately, with our government funding, we are not self-funded or we don't have a hybrid funding model. We are forced to actually limit our expenditure and align it to the government costs that we receive. In fact, it should be the other way around, in that we should be actually costing the activities Vinikata, and how should those cost actually be effective? It's the expenditure that should drive our revenue or our income. But unfortunately, it's the reverse for Yukata. Yes, at this point, we can only cover salaries and wages and our operational expenditure. As I indicated earlier, we got limited results due to savings. It will last us at least 3 years. When that is up, projects to support track plans or startup, we will have no funding for CapEx. Then there was the issue around, what is Ricardo doing to develop the funding model? I believe that research projects that were conducted by POC, some sort of decision needs to be made as to the way forward on the recommended funding model for Ricardo. If there's indication that we can go the hybrid funding model, yes, we can make available the true cost with some of upwards of having to ensure that ICASA is effective and efficient. That should give an indication of how much we would need to actually top up our government grant if we actually can.
Honourable Chairperson, honourable members, particularly in regards to the question on prices, as we mentioned earlier, the price of a call has dropped by 76% over the last 10 years. The price for broadband, 2 years ago, it cost 199 rand for 2 gigabytes of data on mobile data. Now it costs 99 rand. So there have been some significant price reductions, and as the CEO said, we believe it can go further. With regards to progress on call termination, the court case ruled on the 31st of March that we must have new final regulations in place by the 1st of October. Licensees were required to submit their costing information by the 23rd of June. Not all licensees have complied with that. The authority have been following up. With those licensees, we will be getting all that information from the licensees, and we will be ready to finalize those regulations as long as licensees comply. We will have to use the relevant legal procedures to force licensees to comply. If they do not, that may postpone the process.
Thank you, Chairman, for the question.
Obviously, we will embark on an intensive follow-up on the matter, but before we can move forward, let me take Honourable Minister Ms. Hange.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want us to comment on the call termination legal battle. I believe there are unions as well as that moving forward because of will ensure that the outcome of the process is lawful and fine. That's one thing that we need to check because as a ministry we are concerned about the locating high legal costs that are avoidable in certain instances. So we just need that assurance that we will make sure that the scientists do things lawfully and validly. So, Chairperson, you raised a lot of issues in relation to the CASA. That one would like to go repeat. To say, as a minister ourselves, we are looking forward to a CASA that should make some years in transparent decisions. We are looking forward to a CASA that should be able to make well-informed decisions. We are looking forward to a CASA that should be able to at all times be professional and enjoy the respect and trust from all types of journalists. Also, we are looking forward to a CASA that should be able to promote public interest opportunities, such as the universal access, low prices, and quality of services, the honorable members agree. And then, I think I need to deal with this issue of it being a propaganda machine. I think the chancellor is going to be that. Also, on the way to report, there is no confusion. The president's announcement was very clear on the So the proclamation is out as it is, but what is left is for the transfer of function of these other entities, what was not mentioned by the president's proclamation. You see, we all agree that the CASA has been ineffective and initiated. And in the scientific constitutional functions, we agree, and that's why now, with the president's pronouncement, just to make sure that we deal with the international transportation. Except that, you know, you remember when the minister was supposed to present in terms of the constitution, if you read section 192 of the constitution of the Republic of South Africa, you know why the council was established in the first place. So we are saying that we need to, when the president made the announcement, was aligned also with the constitution of the constitution. So there's no confusion with regards to where the council is located and it was also to deal with the issue of the dislocation of roads, because it has been undesirable to find that there is an entity that is responsible for regulatory, for regulation, and at the same time it's being managed by the policy maker, and also there is this other issue of shareholding. So the president really needs this announcement to deal with that. Nevertheless, like you are saying, there are issues that honorable members have raised with regards to the performance management. I think that the CEO managed to deal with the performance management system in relation to the administration government. But remember that you recall that the Act also makes mention of the performance management of councillors, with the issue that honorable people are raising also on the number of councillors that are sitting. I think these are the issues that we discuss with the council when we have to send the CEO that saying that we make it. These are the measures that we are going to look at, and then also the issues where in the administration of the difficulties is also managing some of the council moving forward. But these are the issues that we are saying we are going to address as we go forward. Like your role of this to say we need to come back here and come clear now. Please, I think this is how we concern the council and to make sure that it fulfills its mandate. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Okay, hello, let me outline the process first. We are supposed to take a break and come back for the last transition of SVPC. The hands on me, remember?
Just to get absolute clarity from what the minister just said about the split of the department and the business promotion. Do I include the answer that you've just given us to mean that the CASA stays with the Department of Communication and will not go to the communication?
Mm-hmm.
Is that clear?
Honourable members, could I request that let's not really embark on a bilateral on this matter. The clarity is that the proclamation is out. The functions will be transferred. Yeah, I'm not transferred. That can we leave it as that, please, Honourable members? Okay, I'm affording you a 10-minute break, which would serve for me. I don't know if that's at hand. We are throwing one.
It is wrong, isn't it? Okay, now it is wrong, sister. Thank you very much, Lola. 10 minutes, wait, let's come back here to take the last presentation.